creatures of the galaxy.
Oh, what is it?
Steve Oteo of the AM brings you Theology Thursday with Pastors Brian Nixon and Jared Petro. Get your questions in at studio@star88.fm.
It's Theology Thursday. We're gonna hang out with you. Yeah.
Headphones.
You don't have headphones, but I've been talking this whole time.
Oh, is this real?
Yeah, this is real life.
Oh, now I'm nervous.
Oh, gosh. Welcome.
Yeah.
Steve Oteo. And, of course, our very special guests week in and week out, except for last week when they completely bailed on us.
Hey, it was a great episode.
I was with my mother celebrating her special birthday. So you can't blame me that much.
Blame me, right. Blame me.
For not being here, because I was doing my familial duty.
I too have a valid excuse. I was tying my shoes, which was so
Christian
much more important.
Back there,
I wasn't even here. You guys are fooled.
I can't say of Amberlin because that band's defunct, and I can't say of Theology Thursday because he chooses not to show up.
Hey, I'm not even in the intro.
Now I understand why the band's no longer.
I'm not even in the intro. I've been here for months.
Where's the lead singer?
I've been here for 5 months, and it still says Jared Petro and Brian Nixon.
And Jared's not even on the show anymore.
I know. That is kind of weird.
It was supposed.
You guys
to
not have
changed.
A budget for that? Because I'm pretty sure I can go write one for you. I'm just going to make a little jingle go, Stephen Christian and other people. And, you know, then that'd be awesome.
Man.
I was going to make a joke.
Now
I was going to say, where do you keep that budget? In your turtleneck shirt?
Yeah, you look like a Bond villain today. You look very nice.
Steve Jobs.
You look dapper.
Thank you.
That's the definition.
You do not look like Steve Jobs.
Of course I don't, but my turtleneck does. And it's not a turtleneck.
It's a sweater.
It's a sweater.
That is
Thank
a sweater.
You. It's a button-up sweater.
I like your turtleneck.
It's a really sweet turtleneck, bro.
It's French Connection.
Way to bring it back into style. Way to bring it back.
I know what that is.
Wow.
Yes, you do.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Sorry, guys don't know fashion, you know?
We.
I still wear t-shirts and my holes are ripped from my 1990s. I've been wearing this since the 90s. I'm Steve-O.
That was Mickey Mouse.
That's you, what you. What do you think you sound like?
Your voice is already high.
Listen.
And then you went like next level.
You're just like a grovelly Mickey Mouse. You're like, oh, this is Steve-O Star 88. Steve-O. Oh,
do my voice. Do me.
Oh, Matt.
No, come on.
Teo in the morning, Star 88.
Yeah,
you did
strong.
It. You did it.
Doop, 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 doop.
Wow.
Yeah.
But it is interesting, you know, in your little discourse there, it is interesting how we kind of stick in the era that we thought we grew up in. So,
that's true.
You know, you do have 90s. A little bit of 90s thing going on.
Oh, you want to see my t-shirt?
Mateo, he's kind of...
It's 2000.
Anchor and Braille.
Anchor and Braille t-shirt.
Can I say that your first... the new stuff is great, but that your step song?
Yeah.
That's
in a dance.
That's a brilliant song.
Thank you very much.
If I give you this t-shirt, can you have Micah sign it?
Oh, too soon.
Wow.
I'm not watching you guys fight.
Yeah, I'm not fighting. I'm trying to bring peace
Thursday,
here.
And that's exactly what we're talking about, division. We posted the story this morning. Coach Joe Kennedy officially placed on administrative leave after he refused to stop his post-game prayers. If you guys aren't caught up, an assistant football coach used to pray after every game, 50-yard line. He didn't force anybody to pray with him, but it started a big trend to where players from both teams would pray with him. He got a complaint from... I don't know, a spectator, and the school district asked him to stop praying after the games.
This is high school.
Okay. He refused, and yesterday was placed on paid administrative leave, so now, you know, the Liberty Institute is getting involved, and lawyers,
gosh.
And it's kind of crazy. So we wanted to talk about this, the theology behind it. When do we take a stand, and when do we respect the authority above us?
Now, you added something that's really pretty intriguing to me, and of course, I don't know the story in detail, but let's say he's just doing it on his own accord.
Yeah.
I'm doing this, and the kids on their own accord join him, then I'm all for it.
Yeah,
at that point, that becomes an individual right of that student to exercise their freedoms. Now, Before, if he was saying, okay, you got to come and pray with me because this is what we do as a team, right, that is where you may be crossing the line, is the separation of church and state. But if the guy's going, I go over here and I pray and these kids join him, interesting. It will be interesting to see how this pans out, quite frankly.
So what happened is he says, no, dude, I kneel on the field, I pray. It started, teammates started joining him, other team players started joining him as well. The superintendent said, you can't do that. And they offered to let him engage in, quote, private prayer following the football games, provided no child could see the coach petitioning God. And he said, no, man, I kneel and pray. And people join me, and this is what's happening. The district's accommodation or recommendation, really, for this hush-hush prayer would be allowed, they said, so long as your brief private religious exercise would not interfere with your performance of your continuing duties as an assistant coach. They told him he could not do anything, quote-unquote, religious. He was ordered to avoid kneeling, bowing his head, or doing anything that could remotely be seen as religious.
Yeah.
So then,
to me, I mean, again, I would have to look into this a little bit more, but to me, that's infringement upon his human rights, particularly as an American. So, you know, at that juncture, I think, you know, it may have to come to legal, you know, situation.
Yeah.
But I think biblically, you know, going back to the biblical theology of prayer, we find throughout the New Testament and Old Testament that prayers were offered both publicly and privately. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that the Senate could open up in prayer. They could have prayer meetings. The Congress could open up in prayer and have prayer meetings. But a coach can't. So, there needs to be some sort of consistency whereby an individual is afforded to exercise their religion, whatever that religion may be. Obviously, us as Christians, we're saying that Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. Mm-hmm. But there are other people who will do theirs. So they have to offer it accordingly. But like I said before Theology Thursday started, the flip side is this. We do have to be careful of just saying, hey, anyone could get up and start praying because that's just what we do. That obviously could come back and bite Christians because let's say a Muslim coach gets up and he says, I'm going to start leading these kids in an Islamic prayer. Then all of a sudden we're shaking in our boots going, hey, unfair, unfair. So all I'm saying is that Christians need to be consistent. We need to be biblical in how we handle this. And we just need to, you know, trust the Lord's going to work this one out.
Yeah, and let me go a step further and say, you know, we as American Christians will look at this and go, oh my gosh, see, the world is persecuting us. And yes, to some extent, this is kind of a, you know, it's going to get into courts and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about true persecution. This is not true persecution. Yes, this is an inconvenience. Yes, this is, this is wrong, you know, on many different levels. What you're saying, like a human rights, basic
right.
American level, this is wrong. But persecution, Relevant Magazine just had an incredible article out just a couple days ago. So you can go to relevantmagazine.com and it said, let's be clear about what real Christian persecution looks like, what it means to be under attack. And then it goes off to name the areas of the world where actual persecution happens. And these are talking about ISIS chopping off people's heads,
right.
Beheading people.
Right.
This is people getting thrown into jail for years and years, never seeing their families again. And it goes down the list of just, you know, what's happening in the world right now. So yes, this may be an offense to us as Christians, and man, it breaks my heart, you know, because, man, this is after a game. Just simple, like,
right.
If somebody did something after a game, why don't you walk out? Why don't you leave the other way? You really don't have to pick up the phone and call.
In the NFL, we see that.
Every
see
game. That's why I asked
game.
If it was high school. I was like, man, in this is NFL, is every game.
Yeah.
You know, Tebow had a whole
year
of praying where it was nationally public.
It shows the polarization of worldviews coming to loggerheads over these issues. And sadly, this coach, these kids are put in it. But Stephen, I couldn't agree with you more that you know,
he's on paid administrative leave.
Paid. There you go.
But I'm saying, you know, as far as persecution,
right.
We do, you know, and this could be a slight form of inconvenience and so on and so forth. But true Christian, there are Christians losing their lives around the world.
Right.
Voice of the Martyrs, you know, a lot of different organizations could highlight that.
Let me give you the quote of the story that I found was my favorite. It said, "Real persecution and injustice should not be conflated with what happens when Family Guy makes an edgy joke about Jesus."
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Like, that's a great point. It's just, guys, you know, somebody once told me, like, if you're easily offended, you're going to be offended.
Yeah.
And like, don't take offense to this. Let it kind of be like, oh man, really, we need to stand behind this guy. And I know this situation is going to be worked out. But let your heart be broken for true persecution in the world.
Yeah.
If you want to be, you want to fight social injustice, man, there are plenty of places on this world to fight. This is not the battle to take to Facebook.
Yeah. We posted the article.
We took it to Facebook.
And Facebook.com/
Take it down.
Take it down. It's been interesting. It's been,
now, so far, everybody's been totally civil.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is great.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Thanks to the star listener who has chimed in because, as you said, it's been quite civil. But not everybody is agreeing on it, but still civilly disagreeing, if you will.
I mean, you got a lot of stuff to consider because as a teacher, as a coach, again, working, this even harkens back to the Kim Davis stuff. If you're working in a publicly government-funded thing, you know, then there are rules. I remember when I was a substitute teacher, back when I was on tour, my side job was substitute teaching when I still lived in Mississippi.
Here.
Mississippi.
That's because musicians can't get real jobs. I'm just kidding!
Hey-o.
I'm just kidding. My wife's the principal of a school. I'm just kidding.
You just called all teachers
right,
and substitutes.
I know. That's why I said
that's one of the most important jobs.
Dude, preach it.
I believe the children are the future.
Okay. You cast
Steve-o
it down.
Doesn't.
You cast it into the refuse, and you said it's not real. Common core, Steve-o. Common core.
Oh, man.
Common sense.
Anyway, so you're a teacher. You have to abide by those rules. Our buddy Wooly called in. And so I understand that. I do understand some people are pointing out. Now, if he's the guy that started this, then that's where the rub is coming in because he's a coach. He's a teacher.
Yeah.
He's working. That it's understandable that he's getting in trouble for it. And then it's like because and even back to when I was in high school, prayer has to be student led. It has to originate from a student, you know, because they can't just tell a kid that he can't do that.
Yeah. Eli on Facebook had an interesting comment. We were talking earlier about Matthew 6:6 because a listener quoted it and said, when you pray, go into your room, you know, not to do it in public. But she says, or he, as for that, I highly doubt the coach was seeking attention. When you pray for dinner, you don't pray in your room prior to it, nor are you seeking any type of acknowledgement for praying over your meal. I believe he was practicing his freedom. Mm-hmm. In which if any student did not want to participate, he simply didn't have to join the prayer. I understand it's a public school, but here's a question for you, Beanix. She says, where do we draw the line? At this age, students are learning about the amendments and their rights, yet what they are witnessing is completely contradictory to their text.
Ouch. Yeah. Mm. And before you answer that, Beanix, you know, I like the fact that this guy also did it with respect. He didn't do it with pomp and circumstance, go out to the middle of the field right before the game started and get in a megaphone and say, oh, God. It was after the game, man.
Right.
Everybody's going their separate ways, getting on their buses, taking off their equipment, leaving the stadium. That, to me, showed respect right off the bat.
True. Yeah. And was he still working if the game was over? That's a big question.
Yeah. I know, right? Are you on the clock at that point?
And that's why I said at the beginning, this is really going to be one of those legal snarls where they're going to get down to the details of, you know, what exactly transpired, where's his constitutional rights begin, and where do they end? But to answer the Facebook question, you know, when you look at Matthew 6, you really have to look at the full context of what is happening here. A lot of people will just go, well, you just should go to your prayer clause and pray because that's what Jesus said. But the context, the larger context of Matthew chapter 6 begins with don't be doing public displays of pleasing God. Like, that's what Stephen was saying, and he's spot on. You know, if he goes out there just to draw attention to himself to say, look, I'm holy and I'm special and give me the megaphone and it's all about me, that's what Jesus is saying. Don't do that. Don't act that way. And that's when he says, instead, go before your Father in a prayer room. pray to your Father who's in heaven. And then he gives us this model prayer. So the larger context of that is those people who are seeking, you know, glory by their spirituality. It doesn't sound like this coach is doing that. Now, going back, you know, specifically to this idea of, you know, the public versus private, like I said, Jesus modeled both.
Right.
He prayed publicly. He prayed privately. You know, the disciples prayed privately and publicly. We have individuals in the Old Testament that did both. So I think the precedent is there for both private and public prayer, scripturally speaking.
Yeah.
But the details of his case is, you know, like I said, it's going to be interesting just to see how they transpire.
Yeah, dude, absolutely. Which I don't want to completely veer away from this because I know we have so many comments and we can definitely get back to it. But mm-hmm. as we're talking about prayer and the heart behind it, the term expression of faith came up. If we pray as an expression of our faith or as an act of worship to God, mm-hmm. Public versus private, there are so many ways that we can do that that are not under attack. The
yeah.
term prayer is under attack, but as we are talking this weekend, this art collective, if you will, that is happening, this is a public expression of our faith or an act of worship, if we will, through the arts. So,
yeah.
I, you know, last week we talked a little yeah. bit about the arts, and I know coming up you guys have this incredible, I don't want to call it a gallery, but...
It's the collective.
Yeah.
We're really excited that Stephen and the worship team community here has reinstituted the collective.
Yeah.
And very excited. For those who don't know about the collective, it's Calvary's artist fellowship, if you will. Artists come together, writers, poets, visual artists, musicians, and they express themselves through their given artistic form. And but Steve-O, you're spot on. It's interesting that we can close down someone's what we'd call traditional prayer.
Right.
But then at other times art and self-expression can be a type, a form of prayer. It's interesting. I'm reading a book right now by Daniel Seidel, and he's one of the leading Christian scholars on art. And it's called Who's Afraid of Modern Art? Essays on Modern Art and Theology and Conversation. And part of his, one of his, what he underscores throughout this book is that, you know, that personal expression, it is a type of prayer. You know,
yeah.
this is that person who's been gifted, exuded to be given gifts by God. They're using them, and sometimes they may look Christian, you know, and other times they may not look, you know, meaning Jesus is not in the paintings and so on and so forth. So art is a form of prayer. It's a form of communication
yeah.
as to giving God, you know, his due honor.
Do you think it's because just putting it bluntly, for the most part, in the past anyways, I don't want to say now and kind of steamroll everyone, but could it be that because quote-unquote Christian art has been so mediocre for so long, the public square just doesn't care anymore, and that's why it hasn't gotten, I guess, the flack, if you will?
You know, that could be one of the reasons, but, you know, I feel like somewhere along the way, I want to say 200-300 years ago,
you were there.
Maybe a little less. Wow.
You are older than me.
I like, yeah, okay. Days, thanks.
I'm the oldest in the room. Let's just get
true.
That out.
So here's the problem, is that the church somewhere along the way, and B-Nix will probably have a grasp on the timeline.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, we as a church have given it over and deemed a lot of the arts as the world.
Right.
That is a part of the world, or that is a part of the homosexual community, or that is a part of, you know, that's theirs.
Their lifestyle.
And so then at that juncture, at that point, well, we stop perseverating on those kind of things. So then the craft went down, and suddenly we find ourselves going, wait, that was wrong in history. Somewhere along whoever planted that seed was wrong. And yeah. so now as we are trying to recapture that and take that back, we're steps behind. We are following now the world. We have a God who created it. We're supposed to be a mirror of his character. And so our creation, you know, he is the creator.
Right.
Look
right.
at a zebra. That's insane.
Exactly right.
Why can't I come up with that?
Yeah.
You know, like, that's
yeah.
nutty.
Right.
And let me just say amen to that, because essentially what has happened is the church whole has become what I call more trendy.
Okay.
As opposed to more creative.
Yep.
And what we do is we look out and go, oh, look, they're doing that and they're doing that. So we're going to do that. We're just going to put Jesus's name on it.
Yeah.
Whereas historically, and it's always been, there has been individuals throughout church history that have created something new and viable. Mm. And where that really splintered off, Stephen, you know, as far as the timeline, is really the turn of the last century.
Yeah.
There was a disconnect, particularly here in the United States,
yep.
Where, and I don't mean this in the sense like, in you know, we're all fundamentalists in the sense we believe in the fundamentals of the Christian faith, but we're not fundamentalists in that we're, right. you know, rabid crazy. But there was a, there was a fundamental movement.
He's right.
where they separated themselves from, quote unquote, the world. And so art and music and other things was what they did over there. We're just going to consider ourselves with, you know, and we came up with a list of what we'll do. We'll pray, we'll read the Bible, we'll, you know, we won't smile, we'll wear black and all of that type of stuff. So the idea is that art was, there was a disconnect throughout the by the way, I love black. I wear black a lot.
Stephen's wearing, like, all Stephen's black.
Stephen is
toe.
He is like Johnny Cash right now. He's the man in black. So there has been a disconnect. But let me just highlight another book that I think it's just come out fairly recently. It's by a friend of the ministry, essentially. He's, at least from an editing standpoint, his name's Terry Glaspie. And he worked with me on one of Pastor Skip's books.
Okay.
And he has recently come out with a book called 75 Masterpieces Every Christian Should Know. And I dare say that if I were to hold this book up in front of most Christians and just look at the front, you know, display.
Yeah.
Most Christians wouldn't be able to know, and you can't
Everybody
see this.
Everybody knows Van Gogh,
but you know, Van Gogh starring out. Albert Durer's
greatest,
you know, Revelation.
Record by YouTube.
U2's yeah. Joshua Tree, of course. Michelangelo's, you know, C.S. Lewis.
It's Wonderful Life.
But
Frank Capra directed.
Most people will go, well, I have some sort of you know, remembrance of that. But as you flip through this, is anyone going to know who Andrei Rublev is?
Yes.
Is anyone going to know?
Oh, the old Ruber.
Yeah, yeah.
Me and Rube's best friends.
He's one of the
produced a lot of the greatest records.
No. He is
kicking
one of the
Came
Russian painters that is held in high esteem that we don't know a lot about.
What
I'm saying is Christians are ignorant
right.
of not only art in general,
yeah.
but the heritage
yeah.
of Christians that paved the way. So I would go out and say, most people know C.S. Lewis because he's kind of like a Protestant saint, you know, in the sense.
right.
But I could say, do you know Dostoevsky? Have any of you guys read Dostoevsky? And everyone's going to be like, I don't know. But
yes.
he's considered not only one of the great literary writers generally, but he's also a very strong Christian. And so my point is, we do need to recover. There needs to be a renaissance, if you will, a rebirth of Christians and the arts.
Amen.
And
yeah.
they need to do it, create not just trend, not just go, oh, look, they did it that way, so let's find this version of that, but let's create something new and exciting. And that's what the collective was supposed to
yeah.
be about. And this weekend, we have some art that will be showed, and so talk a little bit about Stephen.
I'm really excited that my band, it's going to be our first performance. As we talk about this, I started this new band for this collective. It's called Mumford and Sons of God.
Yeah,
it's basically taking all of Mumford's songs and adding Jesus to it, because that's what we're doing, right?
No.
Oh crap! Okay,
yep.
way off.
No, we actually this weekend will be doing our first, well, in a while, art collective. The collective is the name of the team, and we'll be doing our first art gallery showing here on campus at SOPO, or sorry, Solomon's Porch. That's a habit. It'll be Saturday after the church service, and then all day Sunday throughout the day till 2 o'clock.
Yeah, and people really need to come out and support the artists, because here's the other flip side. On one hand, we say, oh, we need more artists, we need more creative. But then when they come out and they show and they put their emotions on the sleeve, everyone's going, oh, my kindergartner could do that, or whatever,
right.
whatever they say. And they don't sit down to watch and listen and understand what is going on.
Yeah.
So art takes intellectual time, and hopefully Christians will start giving that time it takes.
I'm so glad you just went there, because I wanted to ask this question, because it seems like, you know, the term judging always comes into play when we talk about anything when it has to do with Christianity. It's like, oh, you guys are so judgy, and yet that's exactly what we do with the arts. I think we don't take the time to take a deeper look at it, because we judge it right as we see it and go, I don't understand that, or I don't know what that means, or I don't care for this, and just kind of brush it off and walk. What should we be doing? How should we as Christians be responding to the arts?
Well, generally speaking, there's, let's call it a classical approach, and that's where you look at form, you look at balance, you look at color. All of these things are important when you judge. And by the way, Aquinas, St. Thomas Aquinas, in the Middle Ages, really said this is how we as Christians should do it: form, balance, harmony, color. But then, of course, modern art came along, starting with Kandinsky, who was a Russian, and he, if you will, would be the godfather of abstract expressionism, later popularized by Jackson Pollock and others. And for them, it was more of about the emotive, the experience, like what I'm trying to communicate. Because the camera changed a lot. Artists were going, well, now we have a camera. I could just go take a picture of something. Why do I need to paint it? So now I have to emote, express myself in a new way, a new form. And so when people look at like a Jackson Pollock and they look at his drip paintings or action painting and they go, my kindergarten could do that. But what they're not understanding is there still is form. There still is balance. There still is that sense of harmony that's going on. And by the way, with Jackson Pollock,
who was an incredible, incredible artist, you know what I'm saying, prior to even his splatter movement.
Jackson Pollock is truly one of the world's great painters. And when people look at, like, well, you know, splatter paints, what's up with that? But his were not totally non-figurative, meaning he did include some figures in his painting, and there were some subliminal messages in there. Usually he put his name in some of the drips and so on and so forth. And it takes, different type of imagery to see what's there. But my point is, now judging it, Daniel Seidel, going back to Who's Afraid of Modern Art, he basically breaks it down into two theories. One called the theory of the cross, which was a very Lutheran, Martin Luther developed this idea that art should represent the theory of the cross, where it should be messy, and it should show human foibles, and there should be some ugliness in it, and there should be, you know, humanity in its worst at times are there, because Christ came down and walked in the mud, in the mire, if you will. And then on the other hand, you know, there's still this theology of glory, you know, this idea that there should be balance and imperfection. And to me, it's not one or the other. I think they're two sides to the same coin. I think there are times when artists need to express the ugly and the dehumanization, and a lot of modern art deals with that. And then there's other times where art needs to represent that which is beautiful and true and glorious. And so I think the Bible gives us two things. And Daniel Seidel's book really, I think, helps Christians walk through modern art, because I think one thing Christians are afraid of is modern art. Yeah. We look at a Jackson Pollock, or we look at Serrano's, excuse my French here, and I'm just saying the name of the piece, so please understand me correctly, but it's called Piss Christ. And a lot of people look at that, and it created a lot of, you guys were young back then, but when I was growing up in the 80s, that was huge. It was nightly news that this artist created this artwork.
And the government
paid for it, and then they tried to shut it down, and it was this monstrous thing. What's interesting is Serrano himself claims to be coming from a Christian worldview. Mm. And so what he was trying to say is, this is what society has done, or this is what how you know, Christ is part of the human fabric of being. But we have always tried to elevate art to this theology of glory, but it really is the theology of cross and theology of glory working in conjunction, and I think we could celebrate both fields.
Man, and to dumb it down even, as we talk modern art, we can talk music, because at its very basic form, even, you know, Stephen, you are the head of worship here at Calvary Albuquerque. How often do people approach you and say, I just felt like it needs to be more reverent and respectful because worship needs this. And then there are those that say, no, we need to be up and praise and rejoicing. And we need, but as you said, it can't be one or the other. I think it's both. But I mean, we die on these hills of basic like lighting for worship. You know what I mean? And so, and I'm talking about just music, not worship in general, just through the art form of music. We divide.
Absolutely. And like, and, you know, I've said it here on the program here before to you guys, you know, that, you know, you're not going to please all the people all the time. You just aren't. But, you know, Paul said in the Bible, I become all things to all men so that I might win some. So that you know, we're trying to put a wide array. This is a massive campus. Yeah. If there was 50 people and they were all over the age of 60, we would be a hymnal church.
Hymns, all right.
You know, here we go.
314,
but,
I'll fly
and the decibel level is going to be at 2, but, you know, whatever. but now, with this magnitude of the size of church, we need to become all things all. And I don't look at it as, you know, I get these complaints once a week, you know, decibel levels or lighting or stuff like that. And I don't look at it as negative criticism. I look at it as, you know what, they've come from a background or they're used to this kind of format. And when I explain to them, here's why, and then invite them to our 8 a.m. service, or if, you know, they go into the 8 a.m. and it's too quiet, hey, we got two other services. But we try to do what's best for everybody. And at the end of the day, you know, this is in our mission statement. We have an audience of one, and as long as he's happy, you know what? You know, as long as our hearts are in the right place, honestly, that stuff doesn't bother me.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, going back, let's just take the whole lighting situation. I know some people would say, "Well, I don't like churches that use lighting," but to me, it's not a that big of a deal, and here's the reason why, is because there is a sense of beauty that happens with lighting. There's a sense of harmony and balance and coloration, and it is, in a sense, a modern form of stained glass windows. So I love walking into these ancient cathedrals. I had the privilege of graduating from University of Canterbury in southern Kent, England.
Here we go. Now it sounds more.
And my after service ceremony. C.S. Lewis and
the
I got
Lord
together.
The Lord himself shone in glory through the stained glass.
That's exactly right. We went to Canterbury Cathedral for our after service session, and I sat there, and it's gorgeous. And lights, and the beauty of the music, and all of this. And I was like enamored by, you know, because I love that. But at the same time, I go to, you know, let's say our church, Calvary Albuquerque, and I look at some of the lights and some of this, and I go, if it's done well, it's a beautiful, harmonious thing. It really does. It's beauty. And one of the attributes that we forget about God, and these are one of his non-moral attributes, is that God is beautiful. There is a beautiful aspect of God. So in the true sense, all beauty is a reflection of who God is. And so as an attribute of God, we want to pursue that beauty.
Yeah. Dude, you mentioned reflection. Our friend Paul in Houston sent this in. He said, art is a reflection of humanity. When a demographic becomes one-dimensional, their art reflects that. One-dimensional art doesn't become engaged with, and one-dimensional artists aren't given credence or voice because there's no depth. It doesn't speak to those looking to connect with emotions and perspectives, and therefore doesn't provoke a response. The worst reaction to art is apathy. That coming from Paul from Houston.
Yeah, I've always liked Paul from Houston, except sometimes he, you know, when he gets his soccer things wrong, but you know. But I love him. I love him all the while. But, you know, and I really do believe that there, hopefully, I'm praying for a renaissance of Christian artists. I think we're on the cusp. I think now in the largest society that people are getting, particularly in the evangelical church, the difference between just following some trendy thing and really creating unique art. So that maybe one day someone will, 200 years if the Lord tarries, new people will be in 75 masterpieces every Christian should know.
Yeah.
That their work will be in this book because it said something new.
Yeah. Let's
just go back to music for a second. What makes great bands, Christian or non-Christian?
Four chords.
No.
Four chords in a dream.
You look at they said something, they combined things from the past and they put it in a new way. Yeah. And they said something new and different, and they created a whole new genre. So let me just go back even 30 years and just highlight who unquestionably, this is just isn't me as a historian coming from this, but this is across the board. And you could try to disagree with me, but I think you'd be up against a whole host. So let's take it early. So you would say someone like a U2. Mm-hmm. What made them so special is, well, you know, were they the best musicians? No. But what they did is they took elements from an atmospheric David Bowie, Roxy Music sound. They took that atmosphere with a post-punk sensibility. They combined it. And then you put spirituality or
and
Christianity.
Social justice.
Yeah. They created something new. And they we still copy their sound through mm-hmm. worship today. And then something else happened. Nirvana came along. And then you go, oh my gosh, these guys took a post-punk sensibility, they mixed it with a little bit of classic rock.
Beatles and Smith.
And they threw all of that in there. And then, you know, so Nirvana became an amazing band. And then you go another 10 years and you go, okay, well, can anything reinvent? And then this group called what? Not Coldplay, but
Black Eyed Peas.
Not Black Eyed Peas. Come on. Radiohead. Thank you.
Oh.
I was hoping someone would get this. Radiohead comes along.
Tom York, Pablo Honey was out like around the same time as Nirvana. So,
what do you mean? What does that mean?
I just mean Radiohead kind of, I feel like that wasn't a decade later.
No,
they were.
Yeah, they
no,
were.
No, but OK Computer introduced the digital age of music.
Okay,
Yeah. And so what they did is they took stuff and they redid it. They just didn't follow a trend. So here's what they could have done. Dude, Nirvana is it. I'm just going to go out and I'm going to do exactly what Kurt Cobain does, but I'm just going to say it this way. No, they took different influences, they put it all in a new package, and something new was birthed.
Also heroin.
I think I know what's up. To do with
so
Tom
all of those, you get patterns. The patterns are not following trends,
right,
but creating something new.
No, I agree.
And that's where rebirth and this renaissance comes from. Go ahead.
Skillet had a song called Rebirth. Thing. Okay. Steven loves it. Listen, I have an idea. Steven doesn't love it. He hates Skillet. So,
oh my God, do not say
I'm trying to get it right.
That's not true.
He doesn't. No, he's
just
friends
wrote
with
a song with him.
Yeah, he did. And he let me listen to it. And I got to hear it, Amberlin fans. I got to hear it, and you didn't. So,
oh my gosh.
Suck on that. Anyway, this is my idea, though. I think at one point, we left, we forgot. It became so much about the message itself, because everybody knows that in Christian industry, the most important thing,
JPMs.
I mean, take the music, take mm-hmm. Christian music. The most important thing is the lyrics, and that is the only form of music where that is true.
Mm.
But I think at some point we forgot that if art is created honestly and to the best of our ability, that it innately carries the message. And some people would say that's a little too mystic. But I disagree.
Well,
because we have
a
friend, Steve-O has a friend who loves hip hop.
Yes.
And recently was talking to him, and then this guy, who's never come to church with us or whatever, didn't even know he worked at Star 88, was like, dude, have you ever heard of Andy Mineo?
Yeah.
Andy Mineo is a Christian artist. Yeah. Our old guitar player in Waverly is like his road manager.
Yep.
Andy Mineo just writes really good music.
We play his latest song featuring Mac Powell.
Yeah, it's crazy. So anyway, my point is, you have this guy that has no engagement, mm-hmm. to my knowledge, with Christian industry at all.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Christian art, whatever. But he recognizes the innate... like talent, the innate, like,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know, wonderfulness of that.
I think that's one of the few areas
quality
where
surfaces,
it's still,
man. Quality surfaces.
And I think hip hop specifically is one of the few areas where we can, where we still shine, because I think of Shy Lan, I think of Andy Mineo, I think of Lecrae, I think of these artists where maybe it's because it's so lyrically driven, when you can create in such an incredible way like they do, it doesn't matter that it's quote unquote Christian or not.
Right.
I mean,
I agree with you because music, art in general, falls under the category of common grace. The Lord, through common grace, has gifted individuals with talent. So we could appreciate non-Christian music, because we could say there's talent. Whether they recognize that gift or not, what they did absolutely is mind-blowing. Whoever that may be, a guitar player, a musician, a rapper. I'm still old school. I don't keep up with... You know, by the way, I still consider the greatest rapper of all time.
Chuck D.
That's exactly
yes!
right.
Yes!
Chuck D.
Speaking of social injustice, and that's...
Public Enemy, Chuck D.
Think of what he was saying. Do you know what I mean? Because as we talk about Lecrae these people... He had a voice. Yes.
Well, we forgot them on that list. Not necessarily Chuck D, but I was thinking like Run DMC.
Yeah. Run DMC. Oh, yeah.
I remember my dad as a kid. He said, "Oh, this rap thing's a fad." Oh my god!
Yeah. I know, right?
Right.
Yeah. That's long, I think a lot
that's
of
the longest
thought.
Fad.
Not me. Yeah. You know, just a little personal story. So, I'm not saying
you went to
violence.
You went to
you're his father.
You got your master's degree.
No.
Rev Run and
so, I was privileged, you know, to grow up during the 80s.
Yeah.
And where a lot of people were exactly saying that. They were saying, and I was part of a band, and we got signed to a secular record contract. Now, we were post-punk. We weren't doing rap. But we broke up, and these two guys, Peanut Butter Wolf and Jeff Jank and all these other guys, they went on and founded Stones Throw Record. A documentary's just come out about them and everything else of that nature. But I remember exactly what you were saying, Stephen, that they were saying, everyone at that time, this is just a fad. This, you know, this is going to come in and out. And it was like, absolutely not. There's an artistic merit. Mm. And for me, at the time, it was Public Enemy. I mean, they were the guys that kind of changed it. There were people saying rhymes over a backbeat. But when Public Enemy came on, I go, oh, man, that is art.
Yeah. That's art. They were the first.
Oddly
mainstream.
Enough, Fear of a Black Planet was my first tape.
Yeah.
For real. And so
mine was Don't Censor
you.
Me by Audio Adrenaline. I'm not kidding.
Man.
That's
incredible.
Real life.
But let's back up. And there's probably some people listening going, man, you guys are talking about this. But here's the thing. We don't have to agree with sometimes the lyrical content.
Right.
We don't have to agree maybe with a particular lifestyle. But what we're appreciating is the innate God-given ability and talent. And we're honing in on the creative thing, saying that right there. Ultimately, is something that God has given that individual to exercise, whether they do it for His honor or not, but we could appreciate it. And that's why we could say, we look at secular artists and go, man, I thank God that person was brought
on. That's my whole thing, is that when it comes to art in general, like if you look at something, it doesn't have to have... I guess when I was a kid, I thought if I was going to be a Christian artist or if I was going to draw a Christian comic book, I had to draw Jesus hanging on a cross.
Right.
But my thing is, the point I was trying to make is that it's almost like when you boil it down, and you have to a degree. I understand that. I'm not saying we live in this fantasy world where everybody just gets it.
Right.
When you just make it solely about, you have to say these three things. You know, you have to include this, this, and this, and then whatever else is all good. You're just going to wind up copying other things that are popular. You're going to follow the trend because you've hit your goal with just, you know, making the base level content. You've hit that, so whatever package it comes in doesn't matter.
Right.
But then when you step away from that, it's just like Paul said, there is zero depth.
Yeah.
You have hit the lowest common denominator, and you can't go any deeper, because that's it.
And let me just say that's why I brought up this two-sided coin thing. A lot of people do the theology of glory well, you know, what we would call praise and worship, but a lot of people aren't doing the theology of the cross well, where the mire, the muck, the reality of suffering and pain and real persecution, and how does that look, and what does that art look like, and all of those expressions. It's not either or. For me, it's both. There is a time where you're just standing in awe and going, this is absolutely gorgeous, beautiful. And then there's a time when you're looking at it going, I don't understand it, I don't get it, but it's telling me something about life, about humanity.
Yeah. It is Theology Thursday. Pastor Brian Nixon. We've got Stephen Christian in here, Teo, myself, just hanging out, having a conversation. If you'd like to join us, 338-3700 is the phone number. Let's go out to line one. Hey, welcome to Theology Thursday.
Hey, it's Brandy. How are you guys?
Doing well. How you doing?
Good. Hey, I just have a comment about art and stuff. You know, as you all know, I do graphic design, and I wanted to make a point that, like, art in the church, not just fine art, like, I think that graphic design is something that I think people in the church, obviously not Calvary, but a lot of other churches kind of think is, like, well, you know, as long as we're getting just like music, the message out, like it doesn't need to be that good, right?
Mm. Oh man,
like
that's what I'm saying.
You know, just
that's like, totally what I was
you
saying.
Know, like Brian Nixon always says, like best art used to come out of the church. Like,
right. Yep.
When I used to be art director there, like I used to tell people, you know, oh yeah, well I'm art director over at Calvary Albuquerque.
Hey, like, this is our brand. Hi, Brandy.
B-Nix just connected.
Hi, Brandy.
You do sound different. I was like, is it? I don't know. Okay, then
this is Brandy. Hi, Brandy.
Hi, guys.
So when you were art director here at Calvary, what you were
yeah,
on?
Yeah, no, I would go to like you know networking events with other agencies in town and stuff. It's like, oh, Brandy, how are you? Like, where are you working on? It's like, oh yeah, I'm art director over at Calvary of Albuquerque, and automatically you just get like, oh,
right.
It's like, no, like we do good work.
Right.
Like, I promise you, we're doing awesome stuff. It's like, oh, well, you know, because just like with people in Christian music, it's like. You automatically get the thought that, well, you
it's
guys work
mediocre.
For a church, so it's so not as cool and as awesome right. as the work that, like, the rest of the world is doing. And we've done that to ourselves because, honestly, like, you know, there's places online that, like, churches can go to get, like, cheap templates and lame stuff with, like, I'm sorry to say, just, like, the bleeding cross for Easter and stuff. And it's just like, oh, my gosh, you are killing me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and let me say a few things on Brandy. And first of all, it's great to hear from Brandy because
I know,
she's
right?
a working artist. I mean,
yeah.
that's and secondly, about graphic artists. Graphic art is art. A lot of people in the snob world, they would say, well, yeah, there's fine art, there's graphic arts. But, you know, let's take the reality that Andy Warhol was a graphic artist before he became Andy Warhol and one of the highest, you know, paid fine artists on planet Earth. So
because with art, it's all about the Benjamins.
Well, no, but
thank
what,
you,
I, but what I'm saying is that graphic art, and you're exactly right, and
right.
she's spot on. Art is about unique creative thought, about putting things together in a unique form and fashion, and presenting that to the world. And a lot of times, people don't get it. Mm-hmm. And here's something for Brandy and all of our artists who are listening. Sometimes you're creating for the future.
Mm.
Your contemporaries may not get you. The people that surround you, and that's why we always have that starving artist. People didn't get Van Gogh, and he truly was a starving artist.
Yeah.
But now we consider him one of the great artists of all time.
He sold one piece in his entire life, and that was to his brother.
Right, to Theo. And so you know, hearing from an artist and saying, hey, you know, let's get creative. Let's do that. She's spot on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because we really, just like with any art, whether it's music or, you know, fine art or anything, like, I would say that, you know, a really well-designed album cover can evoke, you know, some pretty intense emotions just by itself, you know, before you even maybe hear the music. And that's something that, like,
it's
designers
true.
Are able to do just the same. And I think that if we can do that really well, we, you know, especially as Christian designers, you know, as designers who are Christians, just like, you know, musicians who play music that are Christians, it doesn't always have to, you know, scream, you know, Jesus Juke.
Yeah.
It can just be good art, and you can be good at it and bring glory to God that way.
So true,
Brandy. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Yeah, good.
Thank
you know, and let me just say also from a personal experience, I've been doing art my whole life. I was an art history minor for a while in my undergraduate days, but I've been doing art, and I literally have never shown my artwork in a church.
Mm.
I've been asked to do it, but I never have. And the reason and this is part of my thing, is kind of maybe a little bit of pride intermixed with this, but it's like, why show stuff that people ultimately are not going to understand?
Well, yeah. Brian, because when you do your My Little Pony interpretations with sparkle paint, it's awkward. No one
stop
wants to see it.
I get interpretation
it.
If it's paint by numbers.
Yeah, but to Brandy's credit, you know, coming from an artist, and I'm speaking, you know, I'll put off the theologian hat here in a minute, but speaking as someone who actually does art on a weekly basis, I sit down with paints and I actually do art.
Yeah.
It can be a frustrating endeavor when you put your heart and soul into something and people go, oh, my kindergartner could do that,
right.
or I don't get it, or, you know, where's Jesus in this? And then you kind of go, you know what? Never mind.
But here's the thing. Is that why when we're talking fine arts, most people check out because we've walked away. We're talking about the fact that we walked away. If we don't teach them, if we don't show them, then of course we're going to disappear from the arts. And so, you know, Matt and I are currently preparing for this event that we're doing. Mm-hmm. And we've had this incredible opportunity to be involved in this thing called the Casa Ball, right?
Right,
the
right, city. Right. And you guys are going to dance.
And
together.
Stop it. And,
holding each other.
But here's the thing. We have a professional dance instructor. Her name's Patty, and she owns a few dance studios around the nation, including one here in Albuquerque, CSP Dance. She is incredible. She, as we, you know, when we first started, we were the knucklehead morning show team at a Christian radio station. And I call her a friend. She's incredible.
You're right.
And we've learned her story as we've been at dance practice. And she grew up in a Christian home.
Mm-hmm.
She grew up in a very conservative Christian home. And she grew up under a sect, if you will, that said dancing is a sin.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, vile. It's awful. Jesus has no part in this. And guess what? She walked away because right. I look at this person and say, God gifted her with this incredible ability
right.
to dance.
Right.
And she expresses it
in an amazing way.
Brilliantly.
Yeah. And you're right.
But she walked away from the church because it's like, oh, well, this is, I'm dancing.
So did Van Gogh.
This is an incredible expression of Van Gogh. Life for me.
Van Gogh went to Spurgeon's church.
Yeah.
Van Gogh was studying for the ministry. He went to what we'd call Bible college today.
Yeah.
And same thing. And now he, you know, there were some other things in his life he needed to deal with, but same thing. He basically walked away with from the church. And I even think locally as well. The flamenco group here, I think the Encinas family, who started the flamenco. I absolutely love flamenco dance. I'm like one of those groupies that like go and say, oh, this is amazing, these dancers. And I see them at church here, and I when I saw them probably 3 weeks ago, there was a little group of these flamenco dancers that came to church, and I walked over to them and I said, thank you for being here. I absolutely love your flamenco company. And they looked at me and they go, and they saw, you know, I had a pastor badge on, and they said, you know our flamenco? I go, dude, I'm like one of your biggest fans. I go to all your stuff. I'm the groupie guy. I've written like 3 articles about your group, and they're like, oh, so Christians could like flamenco dance? And I'm like, oh, do I like it, man? I love this stuff,
right?
And so you know, I agree with you. I think we need to celebrate what God has done through the arts, and recognize
emerging
people.
Church. I'm just kidding. That's what happens.
This is what I think has happened, though, because this whole conversation is talking about how when we, I guess, oversimplify sometimes, mm-hmm. and we forget about all this other. This is kind of what happens. We got an email, and this really made me upset the other day. I just cried for hours. I didn't cry, but it did bug me. It says, I really like the music you guys play, especially because you mainly play worship music now. Question for you. I can't find anywhere in Scripture where the church will change the world politically or mainly socially. So I'm wondering why the promotion of non-gospel social cause groups. And he puts up a link to A21.
Which is Christine Kane's,
sex trafficking.
Sex trafficking, like to help end sex trafficking. Yeah, no.
And this is what I think is at the heart of the issue. And maybe what I've been trying to get at. Is that when you make it solely about these 3 things. That's just my example I'm using. This basic message, all this other stuff, you have an escape clause to not worry about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The reason we support A21 is because this lady is working in the lives of actual people
right.
who are in horrible situations.
Sure.
Right.
And she's taking them out of those situations.
We have like 5 minutes. I know you want to just go off.
Well, yeah. Just let me put it one fast. I mean, James talks about this is pure religion, is to love the widows and orphans and keep one in spot.
Exactly
it did
right.
not say love the widows and orphans who are unspotted from the world, who are Christians. It says love the widows and orphans. And my God,
what?
if that is not, if that A21 is not
what I'm saying
doing the will of God. Yeah. I quit. I literally quit. Yeah. This is not my religion.
No, I know.
I mean, that is.
I agree. We both.
It extends from it all extends from this artistic discussion, though, because when we make it so simple and it can only be this,
the Great Commission. This is the period, the end, and this that's is the it. Only and that's way you
it.
Can do it.
Yeah, and I don't see anywhere in Revelation where it says that God's going to come down and do this, that, and this with social causes. You've checked out of the world. You have found a Christian not only that, escapism. That's what you've done.
They have separated the totality of the biblical witness. Stephen, spot on.
Yeah.
They'll read this passage, but they'll forget whole books of the Bible. It's not an either-or dichotomy. It is both. It is, we present the gospel, we preach the gospel, but we do good works. Mm-hmm. It's either, we're not saved by good works, but we're saved unto good works. Yeah. And so, if we're not the light and salt of the world, then who is?
Yeah,
right. Yeah, amen.
Right.
Preach it. Preach it.
You know what was amazing? Oh. Honestly, the listening audience couldn't see it, but I am facing you two, Beenix and Steven, and when he's reading it, I could just see the righteous anger instantaneously wash over both of you, because we felt it as well when we read this, because
the sad thing is this is what we've wrought.
Yes.
Because we, for so long, have condensed Christianity to these basic things that it's so easy to walk up to something and say, where's Jesus?
Yeah.
Did you say you have to do this, this, and this? No?
Yeah.
It's not Christian.
Yeah,
and walk away.
And what people don't realize is in the arts, there are amazing artists who are working. I'm going to just throw out in the classical realm, a guy by the name of Avo Part, P-A-R-T. He is considered the greatest living composer. And he is a strong, strong Christian. And his music, unabashedly Christian. And people will, you read a new critical book has been written about him and so on and so forth. And some of the writers are going, I don't believe in God, but if there was, Arvo Part's music makes me want to believe in one. And, and that's what it's like. It's like, people see something so magnificent, so beautiful, so enormous in scope and thought, and they just go, man, I'm thinking about that. That is also likened to social justice issues. Yeah. When you see something so beautiful and so what is Mother Teresa doing? Yeah. What are these guys doing? What's even hitting a little closer home? What's Reload Love doing? Mm-hmm. And then go,
she wasn't in charge of a women's Bible study, guys. So unfortunately, all that Mother Teresa did was for naught. Am I right? Oh, no?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool,
But you know what I'm saying? Is Matt, I like what you're doing. There is a parallel. There's a parallel. There's
it
a disconnect.
Back to the prayer discussion from this morning.
There's a disconnect in larger Christendom of we want to compartmentalize. We want to say, this is over here and that's over there. The Christian life is about that. It's
all
about life.
Yeah. Paul in Houston said Jesus didn't deny his humanity. I don't think we should either.
Oh, let me... So. I like Houston.
Yeah, except he
don't get into the soccer stuff.
There are
stuff.
Other things
Bring
he did
on.
Say, so he does...
Hey, before I know we're... Let me just for our listeners.
Out of time.
For one more time.
Yeah.
You want to come to Calvary Albuquerque this weekend. The Collective,
yep.
Some art, some fine music. Oh. Steve-O and Mateo will be at Calvary Knob Hill.
That's right.
And also you want to pick up Imagine by Steve Turner. He is a friend of you too. Yes. He wrote a book called A Vision for Christians in the Arts. You'll want to pick up Who's Afraid of Modern Art by Daniel Sedell. And you'll want to pick up 75 Masterpieces Every Christian Should Know by Terry Glaspie.
Nice.
All of them will be at Parchments.
There you go. That's man.
Awesome.
We are
also,
out of time.
If you see Steven walking around, just give him a big hug.
Yeah,
tell him
I
sent you.
And tell him you love his turtleneck, because it's cute.
Dapper.
Thanks, everybody. If you missed any part of the discussion, chime in. Facebook.com/Star88FM. You can always find us at our website, star88.fm. Download the podcast. It's absolutely free. We do it every single week. Thanks for listening and being a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for us. Until mañana. Steve Montale in the AM.
Goodbye.
Thursday is intended to be an informational, Bible-based discussion on issues and questions that listeners present. Hosts, pastors, and guests attempt to provide reliable, accurate information. If you have additional questions or concerns, please contact the pastoral staff at Calvary Albuquerque.